From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the third day of July 2019. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. She's from Stuart Peterson. Gary Schnitke will be here to take up the income potential of Northern Illinois grain farms. It's not good, and it's also pretty indicative of what the rest of the nation may look like, though Northern Illinois is one of the hardest hit areas as it relates to the weather and the late start to the growing season. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll talk about the weather forecast, too. That's with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We hear the numbers as they finished up in Chicago at about the noon hour today. July corn up 19 and a quarter, finished at 4.32 and three quarters. December 14 and a half higher at $4.40 and a half. The March at 4.47 and a quarter, up 12 and three quarters. And the May at 4.51 and a quarter, 12 and a half cents higher. July soybeans up 9.5 cents today, $8.85 and three quarters. The settlement price, August 9 and a half higher at $8.89 and three quarters. And the November beans at 9.08, up 9 1/4. Quarter for the afternoon. January up 9 1/4 at $9.19 and three quarters of a cent. The March futures at 9.27 and three quarters, up 8 3/4. The bean oil futures 32 cents higher. Bean meal up $2.60. Wheat futures soft red for the day. Settlement price there at 5.18 and a half, up 15 cents. The hard red July up 10 cents at $4.34. Live cattle futures in Chicago, August contract 105.45, up $1.35 for 100 pounds. October at 106.30, up 95, and August feeder cattle at 136.70, rather 136.57 and a half, $1.80 lower. September at 136.95, down $1.87 and a half. Lean hog 17 and a half cents lower at $73.55 for the day. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson. Hey, Jackie, thanks so much for being with us, and I hope you're looking forward to a great 4th of July.
Oh, happy July 4th to you and to all of our listeners. I hope it's a safe one.
Me too. So be safe out there tomorrow and the next day, tonight as well. So let's look at what yield has been doing, because I think most agree, although there may be some acreage updates yet to come, that yield probably is still the deal. Is that your opinion as well?
Oh, in my whole career, Todd, that's always been the deal. I mean, you know, if you change yield, whether it be up or down, has a bigger impact basically than acreage change most of the time. And when you look at, everybody was appalled at the 91.7 million acres of corn that came out on the report on Friday. And I sat down and I figured it out and I said, okay, so let's say the yield comes in at 166, which nobody really kind of believes, but, and we had come in at 87 million acres, like what was expected, we'd have had a 12.7 billion bushel crop. At 91.7, we come in at 158 bushels to the acre and we have a 12.8 billion bushel crop. So, you know, that's only an 8-bushel difference on all those acres brings it right back into what people's expectation was. And so I think sometimes you just get too wound up in acreage. Acreage is really not what it's all about. That's why in years when we lose a lot of poor quality acres, yields are higher. In years when we lose higher quality acres, yields are lower. I mean, it's all about yield is what it is.
So basis levels across the country have tightened up substantially, certainly since the beginning of the year. However, it's important to note, I suppose, that there are overs being paid, especially in the eastern Corn Belt around some ethanol plants.
Oh.
Does this put the farmer in the driver's seat?
I think it does. You know, we've seen slow farmer selling. I think that's why we saw corn up, you know. They've locked up the old crop. We don't know where we're going on the new crop. So this really has end users very, very concerned about whether they're going to be, and especially an ethanol plant, which, you know, it's so expensive. You can't really shut an ethanol plant down without it costing you an arm and a leg and probably your firstborn kid. And so, you know, when you look at the big picture, I think that we're going to see more of that until guys decide that they're going to let it go. And what's that going to take? That's probably going to take a higher futures market.
So they just need to watch their basis at this point for old crop sales?
You bet. You bet. I mean, you know, that's been the key all along. You know, basis is probably the biggest teller that there is. If you see a market that's going higher and basis is getting wider, that just tells you that there's something driving the board, but it isn't driving the local cash demand. Where if you see basis getting better, even though the market is staying the same or even going up, you know that that tells you that there's more demand and that they need this. Now, this might just be short term. You know, you can't get greedy about it, because once they have what they want, basis will go back to where it was.
On that note, speaking of demand, what do we know on the export situation?
Well, you know, the export situation is kind of interesting. Bloomberg came out this morning and said that they think that China's probably going to come in here, you know, and maybe do a token purchase of corn, beans, and pork, which would be good for us because of the renewal of the trade deal and the talk about trade. And so I think that all of that is good for us in general. Like I said, when we talked on Friday at Commodity Week, I was really happy with the grain stocks report. It tells me that there still has been very good demand for corn. The demand for beans has not been as bad as what you might have anticipated. And so I think that we can expect that that's going to continue to move that way. And I think when you look at the bigger picture, too, crude oil has been going down. Crude oil is priced in U.S. dollars. And when you look at that, that tells you there's more U.S. dollars left in other countries to be able to buy our products, too, which is always a deciding factor. Anytime you have high crude oil prices, it limits how much cash they've got available because they pay it in U.S. dollars. And so I think that things are looking pretty bright right now. My friend from Bloomberg said, he thought that we could see, corn continue to climb. And I don't disagree with him.
What do you think about the weather forecast for the corn crop across the United States? Well, soybeans, too.
I'll tell you right now, if this were a normal year, I'd be mighty worried. I can tell you that because, I mean, it's been hot. And we've turned more dry. We didn't see anybody really increase moisture on the report from the other day. And so I think in general, when you look at that, a normal year, this would be bad. In this particular year, I think that we can withstand more. Dr. Cordonnier and I talked, and basically I'm in agreement with him. A couple of weeks of warm and dry, we can certainly handle. If we get into a third week of warm and dry, then I think we start to see some pretty negative things going on. The big thing is, like any other year, we really need, because of how late this crop is, we need this crop to shade itself, to preserve the moisture that's down there. And so I'm hoping that maybe, we'll find ourselves in a position where the heat is going to give the crop kind of a boost, and we may get there. But I do think it's very different than any other year we've had.
Hey, Jackie, you have a great holiday.
You too. Have a good one, Todd. Take care.
That's Jackie Vake. She is with Stuart Peterson. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist, farm management specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. He's written an article that's targeted particularly for northern Illinois, although I think the rest of the nation will want to pay attention to this one because he goes through the difference between prevented planting and the budgets that go with RP, or crop insurance, and how those pay out for both corn and soybeans. Gary, thanks so much. Why'd you choose Northern Illinois?
Northern Illinois is one of the hardest hit areas in the countries as far as prevent planting. So that's why we chose Northern Illinois as one of the worst areas hit.
Well, let's use this as an example. What do your budgets show you?
So we're doing Northern Illinois budgets, and we're projecting for corn after paying $253 of cash rent, that a farmer will have a minus $83 return from corn, so significantly lower than any year we've had, minus $90 for soybeans. If we took corn prevent plant, that's better than those other two, but still minus $42. And soybean prevent plant would be minus $140 per acre.
So right now farmers are going, whoa. And they're thinking, well, Gary's just not using a high enough cash price, probably.
So we're using in our budgets a $4.50 harvest price. We're calculating crop insurance payments, $4.50 harvest price, and a $4.20 cash price on corn. So that's above what the fall delivery prices are now, and that $4.50 harvest price is 25 cents above what the market's offering on the DEES contract. Hopefully, maybe that will be low, but we would need at least $5 corn prices before we see break evens for corn. So yeah, we need to go up a ways.
Yeah, wait. You said you'd need a $5 in Northern Illinois, a $5 before we got to a break even price?
Yeah, and I'm basing that on a yield of 165 bushels per acre, which if we're looking at Northern Illinois, trend yields, trend adjusted APH yields are probably averaging in the 205 bushel per acre range, so 165 bushels. If we would happen to get 185 bushels per acre, we would be showing a break even somewhere at a 475 harvest price. So mid to high fours before we hit break evens if we have, 180 plus bushel yield.
And it's important also to note that this includes your cash payments, the RP payments.
Yeah, so we're building in RP payments in here, so that's why we needed the harvest price. We assumed that you planted most of your corn after June 5th, so June 8th, we reduced 85% RP policy by 3%, and we included $50 of MFP payments per acre. So $50, we may be low there, but if we go up $30, $40, we're still looking at significant losses for the year on both corn and soybeans.
What if you were at 80 or 75% coverage?
So 80 and 75% coverage, we would be looking at lower incomes right now. 80%, just to give you a feel for corn, we projected at 85% minus $83, we would be minus $96 at an 80% coverage level. So we would go down, $13, $14 if we got from 85 to 80% coverage level. Again, that's based on a $4.50 harvest price. If we get some harvest prices above that, those returns could get better. But alternatively, if we get harvest prices below those, we would have worse returns.
This is no 2012 kind of year.
No, not unless we get, we would have to have prices in the $5.50 to $6 range, harvest prices. So before we would hit those ranges. If we would see something like a $5.50 harvest price, we could be looking at $80 to $100 of return per acre. Again, I'm assuming if we get a $5.50 harvest price, we would be lower yields up there.
Yeah, that still doesn't sound. That sounds like I'm okay. Right. Like I have money to live on.
Yeah, we would have reasonable incomes there. It wouldn't be 2012 levels. 2012, that isn't 2012 levels. We would have to have $6.50 and $7 corn to have those levels. There's probably some hope that higher harvest prices will get us some more return.
Soybeans better or worse?
Soybeans, we're projecting at minus $90 per acre. We don't see as much upside for soybeans, simply because our harvest price that we were using in our projections was a 920. So that's still below our 954 projected price. Before those numbers become positive for soybeans, we would say you would need something like a 1040 harvest price or something really close to a $10 cash price, 1040 harvest price. That doesn't seem to be the scenario this year. Maybe we'll, but that doesn't seem to be the scenario.
Did you look at the other parts of the state? How do they compare, or what are your thoughts on that?
So Central Illinois, we haven't done quite the detailed analysis that we've done for Northern Illinois. Roughly the same, although I would be building something like 195 bushel corn in for Central Illinois and probably 55 for soybeans, which still may be, that's a pretty, given when most of the stuff got planted, it's a pretty optimistic yield. But see, even that, that's below trend still. So that would still be below trend. And we would be closer to break. We would still be like minus $10 negative on those areas. Southern Illinois is kind of hard to say, but I don't think it's any better than Northern Illinois.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that might be as ugly as Northern Illinois. Yeah.
So yeah, no, these are not good numbers, and prevent plant. Are still negative by our numbers. We are only putting a $5 market facilitation program payment on prevent plant acres, so not the full one. Maybe some.
And that's only if you put a cover crop on it.
Yeah, that is the way it looks, and I'm not, USDA has not released those rates. I don't believe that they're going to release those rates for a couple weeks, so maybe if that's, $25, that would help quite a lot. Obviously, if we're planting a cover crop, we're going to have expenses. So it's still, we may get closer to zero on prevent plant corn. I don't see us getting close to zero on prevent plant soybeans, simply because the prevent plant payment on soybeans is going to be lower for a lot of farms.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnittke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks for being with us. Let's hopscotch across the planet. It's first in the United States. Growing areas for corn and soybeans look like they'll be doing, okay over the next week or 2 days or so?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to see some aggressive development take place as we go forward through these next few weeks. We're going to see alternating periods of rain and sunshine and have seasonable temperatures for the most part, and that's going to stimulate some really quick development. And after that, we'll see what happens when we get further down the road. But for the next few weeks, looks very good.
In Europe, they came out of a really hot spell last week. Did they get rainfall?
They did not get rain. They did get some relief from the temperature extremes. We're back to more normal-ish across the continent. But France and Germany lost a tremendous amount of soil moisture in that heat wave last week, and they do not have topsoil moisture any longer in both countries. And the subsoil moisture is kind of limping along a little bit. So we do not see much precipitation for the next week to 10 days in either country, and so the stress will likely continue even though they don't have the extreme heat. So a bit of a concern there for sure.
That'll put pressure on the Black Sea growing region to make up for any losses there. Is that going to happen?
Well, there's some interesting weather going on in that region. First of all, in northwestern Russia, a rather large part of western Russia actually is in a wet weather mode right now. And getting close to the winter wheat and rye harvest season, it will rain almost every day in that area for the next 10 days, and temperatures will be cooler biased. So there's going to be some concern about the quality of that crop there, also about the degree day accumulations that occur in some of the summer crop areas in the region. Farther to the south, though, between East Ukraine and Kazakhstan, those areas have been dry most of the spring and early summer. We're going to see that gradually ease up a little bit. We've got some showers in the pipeline here, and temperatures will be more seasonable for the next week to 10 days in that area.
Let's go further east to China. Their growing regions are doing how?
Well, the North China Plain has been way too dry through much of the growing season thus far, and there is a large portion of unirrigated summer crops in that region, and they are suffering from a lack of moisture. crop development is behind what it should be, and certainly the production potential is beginning to drop. Now, there's an opportunity for some rain coming up here this coming weekend in a portion of that dry region, but it will not be widespread enough to fix everybody. A little follow-up system may come along about a week later that may also try to put a bigger dent into that dry bias. But at this point in time, I would just say that the bottom line is that we're really... Let's try it again. The bottom line is that, for the most part, that North China Plain is not going to get enough rain for a widespread fix, but they will see at least a shrinkage in the overall dry pattern.
And finally, I heard that you've done a pretty cool study for the fall here in the Midwest. What did it show?
Yes. When we look at the lunar cycle and the solar cycle, it's a rather... unusual to have these two cycles agree on much of anything, but they are both pointing towards the opportunity for cool shots of air to come along in the month of September. And if that indeed does take place, obviously with these crops being so far behind in their development, it does increase the potential for at least a normal first freeze date and probably increases that potential for a little bit of an earlier than usual frost freeze. And so we're concerned about the second half of September right now and obviously the impact that might have on our underdeveloped corn and soybean crops.
Are there years in the past where these cycles coincided that you can point to?
Absolutely. 1965 and the year 1983, both were very similar to this year in the sense that we had a lot of rainfall across the region, across the country during the spring, and then we went a little drier during the summer, and then we turned cooler than usual, earlier than usual as we got into the autumn. Those 2 years plus the year 2001 are part of this lunar cycle that repeats at about 18-year intervals. Well, 2001 did not generate an early frost freeze event, but we were also at a solar maximum at that time, whereas the 1965 and 1983 events were occurred while we were at a solar minimum, just like we are approaching right now. And so there's a certain degree of similarity there, and that raises that potential for some frost and freezes, especially since the lunar cycle is already advertising some cool air for some of the north central parts of the U.S. We also looked at the year 1974 and 1995, which were both years that had crop development in the summer behind normal, and both years had a freeze as well. Well, guess what? Both those years were solar minimum years, just like what we're in now. And so that raises that potential for early season frost and freezes.
Hey, thanks so much.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Helps us to wrap up this edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us and listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, or most of it, in its entirety, from the opening market report to the closing market report, everything in between, including Commodity Week. That'll be recorded early this week. Our panelists will include Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services, Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting, and Mike Zuzlo at globalcommodityanalytics.biz. You have a great 4th of July holiday. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.